Nikita Khrushchev is the Soviet leader best remembered by most Americans for the Cuban Missile Crisis and for once banging his shoe in protest at the UN General Assembly. He's the premier who succeeded Stalin and began the process of de-Stalinization. But in October of 1964, Khrushchev was ousted from office, and his name was unmentionable in the Soviet Union until the days of Glasnost. Now there's a new account of Khrushchev's fall from power. It's written by Khrushchev's son, Sergei, and translated and edited by my guest, political scientist William Taubman. Taubman has written several books about the Soviet Union and is working on his own biography of Khrushchev. Nikita Khrushchev smuggled out his own memoirs before his death. In this country, it's common for leaders to write memoirs after they leave office, but that's pretty rare in the Soviet Union. I asked William Taubman why.
Well, in the Soviet Union, when you up until this point, when you leave office, it's usually not under your own power. Lenin died in office. Stalin died in office. Khrushchev was ousted. Brezhnev died in office. His successors, Andropov and Chernenko, died in office. Gorbachev may be the first one who voluntarily ups and leaves and doesn't feel pressured to keep silent.
How does Sergei's memoir about his father compare to Khrushchev's own memoirs?
Well, Khrushchev's own memoirs were really not memoirs, strictly speaking. He dictated 200 hours of recollections, often by himself, without access to papers, over the course of several years, during which he got sicker and sicker. They were rather disorganized and had to be organized and put together, as they were when they came out some years ago in English. Sergei Khrushchev also dictated his notes over a period of years, but then he himself sat down and organized them and wrote them. Nikita Khrushchev never got really finally to do that. So these are real memoirs. This is a real book. The author was there from beginning to end to put it together, and in that sense, it's quite different.
Did Sergei tell you why he wanted to write a book about his father?
He didn't tell me per se, but I think it's clear from the book itself and from the correspondence that we had as I worked on editing and translating it. He feels, and rightly so, that his father was done a grave injustice, that having made a contribution to his country at great cost, he was then relegated to outer darkness for the rest of his life after he was ousted from power in 1964, and that... What for? Because he began the project that Gorbachev is now trying to complete. So Sergei has felt that this is long overdue, and I think he's trying to correct the historical record, pay homage to his father, and in addition make a contribution to the current effort at change and reform in the Soviet Union.
But let's talk about Khrushchev's importance in the Soviet Union, what some of his real accomplishments there were.
Well, Khrushchev was the man who made the first break with Stalin and Stalinism, and that is his greatest contribution, for which he is still remembered and I think will always be remembered. He was the one who had the courage to get up in 1956 and to say that this godlike figure, whom everybody had worshipped and feared, was in fact a criminal. He was inconsistent, Khrushchev was, in developing this indictment. And that, among other things, has marred his image at home as well as abroad. But that contribution is something that I don't think anybody else, any of the other contenders for power, ever would have made.
How was he inconsistent?
Well, he was inconsistent in that every other month, or virtually that, he would have something good to say about Stalin. The bursts of what was called de-Stalinization, the big bursts, took place in 56 and again in 62. And in between, he seemed to be unable to carry it through. And that was not only because I think there was resistance from Stalinists, but because in his own mind, he was ambivalent about Stalin. Stalin had been his mentor as well as its tormentor.
Do you think that Sergei's memoirs offer new information about how the tide turned against Khrushchev?
I think they're full of all kinds of interesting new information, of both the everyday details about how the coup against Khrushchev was prepared and mounted, and why Khrushchev, although he'd been informed about it, did nothing. There's been a puzzle, really. How could this man, Nikita Khrushchev, who survived Stalin against all the odds, who succeeded him against all the odds, who triumphed over everyone else. How could he be toppled so quickly and easily from power? And I think that this book answers the question.
Well, why was he deposed?
Well, he was deposed because the plotters disagreed with his policies and coveted his power. They had substantive policy disagreements with him, and many of Nikita Khrushchev's policies had indeed alienated virtually every constituency that he had, the military, the party, the people. So there were plenty of things to hold against him, but it wasn't just his policy mistakes. It was also that these were ambitious men who wanted to rule.
You said that you thought that Sergei's book about his father offered new insights about why, although Khrushchev knew that he was going to be deposed, he did nothing to stop it.
Well, Sergei surmises, and I think he's probably right, that Khrushchev by the end was too tired to resist, that he rejected Sergei's report that a plot was on, but Sergei suspects that deep down he in fact accepted it. He knew, and he just refused to fight. It was too late. He was too tired. Things were going too badly, and in a sense, Sergei doesn't quite say this, but in a sense, perhaps he was relieved.
What effect did it have on Sergei to watch his father be ousted from power and to watch the whole family basically be banished?
Well, a lot of the book describes the period after Khrushchev's ouster, which we knew nothing about really until this book came out. It describes how Nikita went into a kind of dark depression for some months after October 64 and how the family was forced to give up many of its privileges and how Sergei himself was forced to relinquish his sensitive job as a rocket engineer. How they were treated really as dissidents. And it's a sad tale, but it's also a tale of how, to some extent, the family pulled together, defending the old man, trying to lift his spirits, trying to provide him with distractions and entertainment. And then, of course, Sergei gets involved with his father in the whole effort to produce the memoirs. And one can see, reading the chapter on the memoirs, that they were not only the creation of a historical document, but they were, in effect, a way of giving Khrushchev something to live for, something to replace the power that he had lost.
Also gave him a taste of his own medicine, in a way. Didn't Pasternak have to smuggle out his memoirs?
Well, Pasternak had passed to the West, yes, the manuscript for Dr. Zhivago, for which he had been pilloried. And so Khrushchev was getting some of his own medicine. I think you're right to inject that tone into it. One has to see the other side of Khrushchev. Back in the 30s, Khrushchev had been part of, certainly by the end of the 30s, the Stalinist leadership, which presided over the purges in which hundreds of thousands and millions were liquidated. Khrushchev had blood on his hands, and so he was indeed getting some of his own medicine.
The cemetery that Nikita Khrushchev is buried in was closed to the public for 10 years.
Yes.
And Khrushchev's name was basically unmentionable in public in the Soviet Union until Perestroika and Glasnost. What turned it around for him?
Well, we can actually date the moment when it turned around. It happened in 1987 when Gorbachev gave a speech on the 70th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution. And in this speech, he tried to set some of the historical record straight. And in that connection, he talked about Khrushchev's contribution, his courage. And that's really when it began turning around. And there's now been a kind of a small flood of pieces on Khrushchev. Also, speaking of the cemetery, I have gone there every time I go to Moscow. And I stand by the monument, partly in tribute, but mostly, I must admit, to listen to what Soviets are saying about Nikita Sergeyevich. And over the years, as I stand there, I can track his rehabilitation in the comments of Soviets who come and contemplate the monument and, in some cases, listen to guides who are telling them about the Khrushchev. And back in 86, 87, you know, they seemed to recognize this was Khrushchev. The older people knew something about him. The younger people hardly did. Well, on my most recent trips, you can hear guides saying this is Khrushchev. He made a great contribution. He's the one who dethroned Stalin. He's the one who did this and that. So, as I say, you can track the change by standing silently in front of the memorial.
How well is Sergei Khrushchev's book selling in the Soviet Union? Do you know?
Actually, his book has, to my knowledge, has not yet appeared in the Soviet Union.
Oh.
He chose to have it come out here first, and I don't entirely know why. The fact that he did, it might even be a kind of ironic commentary on the past in which if your book came out first in the West, you were likely to be hounded and even arrested. Now it comes out first in the West deliberately.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
You're most welcome. It's been a pleasure.
And William Taubman has just edited and translated the book Khrushchev on Khrushchev by Khrushchev's son, Sergei Khrushchev.